Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with the one and only Martina McBride, who's going to be headlining this year's Rock and Roll for Children charity event on Saturday, March 23rd at the Fillmore in Silver Spring. Martina, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
My pleasure.
Now, this year, as always, it benefits the Children's Inn at NIH. How did they reach out to you, and why did you say, well, you know, you got a busy schedule. How did you say, oh, I'm pushing my chips in on this particular event?
Yeah, well, it's a great event, and, you know, all of the money goes to benefit the children, you know, and I just have a soft spot in my heart for kids. I have three daughters of my own, and so anytime we can do something to help, I'm there.
Absolutely. And I think last year it was Ann Wilson. I think the previous year was Steven Van Zandt. They always get a big lineup. Do you know who else is going to be sharing the stage with you?
I'm not sure. I think I read something about Chaka Khan, which is incredible.
That's a double bill. Do you have an idea of what we might hear? Are you still working out that set list, or is it something where you're going to be performing with other people, or is it mostly just going to be you doing a solo thing?
As I understand it, it's just me doing a show, and we'll do, you know, a lot of our hits. We'll be doing, like, This One's for the Girls, Independence Day, Broken Wing, Anyway, Love's the Only House, which will be especially appropriate for the evening. Yeah, so it's just we have a fun show. My band has been with me for a long, long time, so it's like family, and we just love to get up and play music.
Well, you just mentioned a bunch of my favorite country songs ever, so I think it's going to be a good show. Take me back to when you first got into music, because this is for the children. So when you were a kid, how did you, you grew up in Kansas. Was it a dairy farm? How'd you get into singing? Didn't your father perform some?
Yeah, my dad has retired now, but he was a farmer, but he also was a musician, and he had a country band on the side, as a hobby. And I started singing in the band when I was about 7 years old. I just always wanted to sing since I was about four. And so it really just something that I fell into naturally and just, you know, at some point decided to pursue a career and moved to Nashville in 1990 and was lucky enough to get a record deal and have been making records and touring ever since.
Who were those idols back then growing up? What, you know, was it the Dollies or other genres even?
Yeah, I grew up singing like Reba and Dolly and Loretta and stuff that was popular on the radio in the 80s. But then I moved and I started singing in a rock band. So I sang Ann Wilson, Journey, Pat Benatar, Linda Ronstadt was one of my idols. And then I sang for a while in a band that did, you know, Whitney Houston and Aretha Franklin. And whatever was popular on the radio as well, like Madonna. And I just sort of sung a bit of everything and then settled on going back to my country roots and moved to Nashville. And I've been doing that ever since.
How did that happen? I know you got married and you and your husband moved to Nashville around 89, 90-ish. Was he on Garth Brooks's crew? What's the story with that?
Well, he had a local sound company in Wichita, Kansas, that he moved to Nashville when we moved here. And he got, he actually just got an offer to go and mix sound for Garth Brooks for a couple of shows and then kept in touch. And when Garth could carry production, when he blew up overnight and could afford to carry production, he hired John's sound company and hired John as production manager. So he went out and toured as his production manager for several years. I went out and sold t-shirts for Garth for about a year while I was trying to get a record deal.
Gotcha. And then
I could be with my husband on the road, yeah.
That's perfect. And then you guys cut the demo together and that led to the original record deal?
Exactly. That's right, with RCA Records.
That's so awesome. All right, so that was the first album. And then I remember, the big blow-up you mentioned earlier, Independence Day. I always thought it was so cool that was, to me that's an all-timer country song that's going to be in every top, 100 list ever whenever they make those. But I love the double meaning of it. You know, it's become this patriotic anthem, but it really, talk about how originally it was that a gutsy song about a controversial issue, is domestic violence.
Yeah, Independence Day is about domestic violence. It's told through the eyes of the child who's now grown up. And when I heard it, I was just blown away. And I'm from a really small town in Kansas, kind of a farming community where nobody really talked about domestic violence at all, ever. So when I heard the song, I felt like it would be the kind of song that could help someone, you know, and through that song, I got really educated very quickly about how massive the problem of domestic violence and violence against women and children is in the world and in this country. And I got a lot of letters from women telling me their stories, and that song, you know, was kind of banned on the radio. There were 10 stations that never played the song. It only reached the top. It reached number 10, was its peak position. But, you know, it went on to become my career song. And I'm just so grateful for that song and for being able to be the one that it kind of traveled through, you know, out into the world. Cause it, you know, it gave women, some women, the courage to leave. There are situations. It also gave women a feeling that they weren't alone, that somebody was, you know, understood what they were going through. And I didn't write that song. It was written by this amazing writer named Gretchen Peters. And, you know, I just feel so lucky that song found me.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, you were ahead of the curve. You really were one of the first to actually talk about that issue. So thanks for that. I mean, but all those early hits are like, you know, the soundtrack of a lot of our youth. I mean, My Baby Loves Me, Wild Angel, all those songs, Broken Wing, Happy Girl. How do you think you differentiated with all those when you're first coming out, those first few albums? How did you separate yourself from the Faith Hills and the Shanias and the Rebas? Like, what do you think differentiated you and your sound, other than that you could belt the damn rafters off?
Oh, thanks. I don't know. I never really thought about that when I was starting out. You know, I never thought about how to set myself apart. I just always found songs that I felt really passionate about. And, you know, I was very involved in the making of my own records and production. And I feel like we came up with a sound that was different for the time. And just, it was just a lot of heart and hard work, you know, and fun. It was fun too, on top of all of that.
Well, I mean, I've seen you do it live. It's one thing when you see, you know, someone that, you know, sounds great in a recording or, you know, on the radio, but for you, you've always been one of those ones that stands above the rest of the crowd when you see you live. Like, when those high notes come, you know, you almost hold your seat and can they do it at various shows. But you actually can do it. We're radio, but paint a picture of when you're on stage. Do you ever have that moment right before when you're like, all right, I got to unlock that upper register? What is that even like? Because I think you can go as high as anyone.
Oh, well, thank you. It's, you know, some nights are better than others. It's live, but It's a great feeling. It's very, like I said, I've been doing it since I was a kid. So Linda Ronstadt said one time, she said that when you're singing and you're on, you know, you're doing it well, it's like skiing downhill. It's just this really exhilarating, physical feeling that's pretty awesome. And then, you know, when you're connecting with an audience, when the audience is with you and they're with their heart and soul and their emotions, it's amazing. I mean, I'm so lucky that I get to do this with my life. You know, I feel so grateful because it's a pretty awesome thing, I will say.
It really is. I like the skiing analogy. Your country slaloming. It's great. I noticed once you became a mother, a lot of your songs started, I mean, how did that affect you? Cause I know a lot of your songs, you know, that you got This One's for the Girls and In My Daughter's Eyes, a lot of those songs start coming out. Take me into that part of your career and how you think that actually, you know, being a mother actually influenced those songs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, becoming a mother changes your whole world. It changes everything. And, I never really thought specifically how it changed my song choices, but looking back, obviously it did. I don't know if I would have been able to sing In My Daughter's Eyes without having, you know, a daughter at the time. And I still love singing that song. I see all three of my girls in that song, you know, three girls. And, so yeah. And, you know, songs like Concrete Angel, I don't know. I just think it opens your heart, more, you know, when you become a mother, you see the world in a different way and in a more probably compassionate way. And that songs like In My Daughter's Eyes, Concrete Angel, even Love's the Only House came along. And I was open to them probably more than if I hadn't had children.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, we could sit here and talk all day about all your songs, but what we want one. Let's end it on that hopeful note. Anyway, you mentioned it earlier. I've always loved that. I thought it was one of your more underrated songs. It's just that hopeful message, and it's a good place to end the interview. Just that hopeful message of, you know, what's the lyrics? You know, the world's gone crazy. It's hard to believe the world will be better than today,
yeah.
But believe it anyway and sing it anyway. And I think that ties into this charity event too. But why do you think that's just a good attitude of hope that no matter what's faced in us, rise above it and just believe, do it anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a great message, right? I mean, it's really better than the alternative. And, you know, I think everybody has to have hope. Every human being has to have hope to keep going forward, to keep getting up every day. And so obviously these families and children and their parents are facing incredibly tough times. And so, you know, I feel like, having some hope, especially in that situation, is so important. So that song, when I sing that song every night, every show, it speaks to me differently, and it still resonates, you know, all these years later. And I feel like, especially that line that you mentioned about, you know, this world's gone crazy and it's hard to believe that tomorrow will be better than today. Believe it anyway. That line in particular kind of soothes me and comforts me when I sing that. So I hope it does that same thing for someone else.
Awesome. It definitely does. Well, you've been more than generous with your time, so thanks again for joining us. Again, Martina McBride, it's the Rock and Roll for Children Benefits, an annual thing they do. It's Saturday, March 23rd at the Fillmore in Silver Spring. Closing words, why should everyone come on out?
Well, because it's a great cause, and it, you know, it goes to benefit children and their families, and the Children's Inn at NIH, and it's going to be a fun night. So it's a win-win. You get to have fun and listen to some music and also raise a lot of money for a really great cause.
Awesome. Thanks so much. You've been great. Everyone, Martina McBride on WTOP. Thank you.
Thank you.